right, we're going to get started, folks. Good morning. Really glad to see you here. This is the first of our breakout sessions. I think if left to my own devices, I would have just like planned a second CBC. But in the effort to like get in all the stuff we wanted again, we have pretty short sessions. So 45-minute sessions, they're going to come fast and furious today. But I want to make sure that you all know that if you have questions about anything you see today, please feel free to like get in touch with me. My email address is pretty simple, drjdrj@brewersassociation.org. And it is there for you to use, so please feel free to do so. So this presentation is, we've put it together, my team, at Crafted for All. Crafted for All is a professional development platform that I've been running for the last couple of years with these two wonderful people. This is Elena and Lewis. Not only do they help with Crafted for All, they're also my team at the Brewers Association, so they really... keep me upright. So I would say please give them a round of applause because they're awesome folks. And if we ever grow and you have a hyphenated name, please let us know. You might be able to join Team Hyphen. So. All right. So today... I'm going to say a lot of the sessions that we're doing today are like picking up conversations that have already been underway. Right? They're just collective conversations. And the collective conversation that has already been underway is we already know that this is important. We already have an ethical commitment to this. We know that there are discrete financial benefits to diversifying our consumer base and our employment pool. We do not know where to start, right? So how do we get started? How do we know what we're doing is working? That's the point where this conversation starts. Now, if you need to go back, we will go back, but just not here, okay? So that's where we're picking up. So the one thing that I've probably said most since I've worked in this space, in this industry, is there are no one-size-fits-all solutions. Right. I saw some folks that I met in Bozeman, Montana, a little bit earlier, and you know we got folks from Athens, Georgia, in the room. Right, diversity, if we're thinking of that as a goal, looks radically different in those two places. Right? Different people, different communities. So it's going to take different strategies to reach them. There are no one-size-fits-all solutions, and if there were, we wouldn't be here today. Right. We wouldn't have to be working on this. So the first thing I think we need to do when you're starting about, like, okay, where do we start? What do we do? Is that you need to know what you mean when you say the word diversity. What are you actually saying when you say that word? Right? Because I think a lot of times it's a euphemism for black and brown people, right? But maybe that's not what it means in your community. Right. Maybe it's veterans. Maybe it's an older population. Maybe it's neurodiverse folks. Right. Maybe it's the LGBTQI community. Understand what it is that you mean. And I loved kind of these shortcuts. Who do I want to have a relationship with that I don't right now? Right. And it can be as simple as that. If you want to get more complicated, you can go to the census and see what your community looks like and then say, who am I missing? Right? And we'll talk a little about that. So as you're thinking about what does diversity mean, give that word context and specificity. Right. So it can be things like what one of my good friends, Julie Verratti at Denizens Brewery in Maryland, realized was there is a large Ethiopian community that is within a couple of blocks of one of my tap rooms, and I don't have a great relationship with this community, either among my employees or my consumers. That's contextually specific, and it can be that granular. Okay. Number two, and maybe this is the most important, You want to connect whatever your goals are to your overall business goals. Right? Connect whatever your DEI goals are to the overall goals of your business. Right? If that's profit, pay back loan, sell, whatever your overall business goals are, if your DEI goals are not aligned, when times get tough, you're going to drop the DEI work because it's not aligned with your overall business goals. Right? So those two things need to go together. And I think there's one piece of that that we neglect that is super important. I picked it up in higher ed. Teaching in higher ed is super interesting. It's basically, it's like 18 to 24-year-olds like looking at you like you're a slab of meat, right? Like they're just like... And one of the ways that you lose a college student really fast is give them something to do and they don't know why they're doing it. Right? Like they're just like, what is the point of this? Right? So like you have to tell people like, what is the objective? What are you going toward to make it relevant so they get it? They can hold on to, I will get a grade, but that's a terrible reason, right? That falls apart. It's pretty flimsy. If you look at your production manager or your tap room manager or whoever, and you say, you need to do this DEI work, and they're like, why? And you say something like, well, it's the right thing to do, right? That's the equivalent of you're going to get a grade on it. Right? You need to tell them why it matters to their job in the brewery. Right? Why is it aligned with the work that they are trying to accomplish every day? Because if you don't give them that alignment, then it's really, really challenging to get them to be bought in. Right? So take some time to think about that. How do you align your overall business goals with the DEI goals? Lastly, create a responsibility structure. This is usually someone, some committee, or even a living document that has the responsibility for checking into this work at regular intervals. Okay. Frank Dobbin is kind of the leading researcher on organizational diversity, equity, and inclusion. He runs out of Harvard University. And he did this meta-analysis of hundreds of previous studies that have been done on organizational DEI and found that one feature made DEI programs more successful than others. Right? And it was the existence of a responsibility structure. Didn't matter what the other things were. Right? So important to make sure that there's some locus of responsibility for what's going on. All right. So, wow, that is special looking. we're just going to roll with it. It doesn't look like that on my computer. So I think the first place to start is to think about strategic goals, right? So we talked about alignment just a moment ago, right? So you say, like, these are our DEI goals. They're well aligned, right, with our overall business goals. And so we need to say, like, okay, what are some strategic goals that we can use to pursue? So I'm just going to use an example I've used in the past. Let's say that you are... Anybody from Florida in the house? No Floridians? No Florida guy? Okay, well, we can talk poop about them now. When I was in Florida, I brought a lot of data down, and one of the things that I know... Like, all craft breweries skew very young, craft beer drinkers. We skew millennial pretty hard. Florida skews younger than most in terms of their consumers, even though their general population is actually much older, particularly in like metro areas like Atlanta, Orlando. So I was showing them the data, and I was like, you all, older drinkers are a huge missed opportunity right now. Like, you are selling a ton of beer to very young, much younger people, but there are a lot of people between like 40 and 60 with like hella disposable income who like beer. You should probably think about reaching those folks. So let's say you're a tap room down in Florida. You've got a very, very young consumer base, and you're like, you know what? We need to make some relationships with the older population to get some more folks in. Since we sell all our beer on premise, we need people here, right? And we're always trying to get more people into our tap room. So more people, let's concentrate on that overall goal by focusing on get more older people in here, right? New set of folks. So well-aligned goal, strategic outcome. We want to grow number of visitors to our tap room by making better relationships with the older population. Right? That's a strategic goal. The next thing we need to do is ask ourselves, why aren't they here now? Right? Why aren't they here now? And the way that I like to frame this question is barriers. Right? There are some perceived barrier that those folks are experiencing that is keeping them from forming a relationship with us. So we need to identify what those perceived barriers are. Right? I exist in the space between 40 and 60, and I will say that one of the barriers that I experience often is when it's too damn loud. I do not like when it's too damn loud. I'm like, this music is too loud. It's too loud, right? And if it's too loud, I'm not coming back, right? Any other barriers that you might think an older population might experience? Yeah. I don't know either. That's fantastic. Thank you. Roxanne? Forcing people to offer off a QR? Oh, yeah. Okay, so like forced QR code, no other options. I saw some hands this way. Yeah, absolutely, right? Just that social exceptions piece. Yeah, right here. Yeah, this is perfect. So we've got a geographic barrier. We've got a social barrier, right? We've got a like technical barrier, right? We've got all these different types of barriers that we're experiencing. I'll grab one more, yeah. Yeah?
We get the tourists in the summer from like Yellowstone come through, and if the locals walk in and it's just bombarded with the tourists, they'll usually walk out.
Yeah.
Or they'll grab a six pack and walk out and go somewhere else because the tourists will just take over everything.
Yeah, okay, so you've got some logistics stuff here, right? Great, this is perfect, right? Like, so this process right here is what I think everybody should do at the beginning of when they've looked at some strategic DEI goals, right? Like, they're just like, okay, who are we trying to form a relationship? What are the barriers they are experiencing? You'll notice here I said perceived barriers, right? So it's about their perception, not yours, right? And always remember that just because you might not perceive what somebody else perceives doesn't mean it's not real. I'm going to say that for the people in the back. Just because you don't perceive what somebody else perceives, it doesn't mean it's not real. It's real for them, and that's all that matters. Okay. So once you identify what those barriers could be, figure out which ones you can remove. You will not have the power to remove all of them, but you will have the power to remove some of them, and then you form tactics for removing the barrier. Right? If it's like, Grandma does not want to use the fucking QR code, right? Like, you got paper menus. You can do that. It's an easy tactic, right? People who have mobility challenges, tables that are too close together, you can move the tables, right? I don't like your chalk tap room thing. I can't see it, right? You can give me something to put in my hand. So figure out what are the tactics that you have the ability to use to remove the barriers that people are experiencing, right? This is an infinitely better approach than trying to bait people in, right? Remove the barriers that people are experiencing. Don't have Matlock night at the brewery, right? Okay. Importantly, once you talk about those tactics, you start looking for outcomes, right? What is the outcome of this tactic that I have put into place? And then measure that outcome. So let's say you decide you're going to call up the local active adult community and suggest that you have a social outing, right, at your tap room. Maybe you do it at 3 p.m. because that's when it's quiet, right? And you can look at things like how many people showed up for a particular event, right? What were your gross receipts during those hours? Right? Like things that you can measure so that you can know whether the outcome was positive for your event. Once you measure the outcome, then you just reload it in the top and say, if it worked, keep going. If it didn't, change tactics. Right? We'll say that measurable does not mean quota. Right? I am not a fan of counting people. So you notice that when I talked about outcomes or key performance indicators, I often talk about things like sales, subscriptions, distributions, things along those lines. I don't love a quota, and so I don't suggest that you instantiate them. So just remember, as you're thinking about removing barriers, stick to your established strategic goals. One of the downfalls of a lot of DEI work is that you try to do everything. You can't do everything, so stick to the goals that you set, right? Focus on those active tactics for removing barriers, and then lean on that responsibility structure that you created at the beginning to keep you on track, right? So I am going to give you all an assessment tool that Crafted for All uses to help folks on our platform to assess where they are in their existing DEI practice in their businesses. So it's basically like, where are you so you know what to go? I think we have 50 paper versions, so if you're willing to share with somebody, please do. If not, you can find it digitally, those of you who have computers out. If you go to craftedforall.com/sa-tool.pdf, you will see it there. So craftedforall.com/SA, meaning self-assessment, -tool.pdf. Elena, could you ring one for me? So what you'll see on that self-assessment sheet right now is, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Down the left, you will see a list of discrete areas of business function. This list for me is pretty tailored towards beverage companies, but it could be used for other types of companies as well. You'll also see some blank spaces on the left where you could add some things if you want to add them. If you see the acronym IEJ, that's just the one we use at Crafted for All. It means inclusion, equity, justice. Mm-hmm. And then you'll see across the top, stage one, stage two, stage three, stage four, stage five. So this is really just a simple matrix, and you're asked to kind of evaluate where you are in each of these areas. So let me describe what our stages are so that you can kind of carry this discussion either here or later. So stage one is what we call the inactive stage. That means absolutely no inclusion, equity, and justice work has begun in this particular area. Progress towards greater diversity through greater IEGA practice and culture are not explicitly part of the organization's goals, right? There's just nothing, okay? So let's say, I would say a lot of organizations I work with don't have a lot of stage ones until they get to the very bottom and they see supplier and partner diversity, right? Which refers to the diversity of the people you use for your vendors and things along those lines. And they're like, yeah, we don't do that at all. Right? So that might be an inactive area there. Stage two is the reactive place. This is a common place to be. This is when your organization is mostly existing in a compliance mindset, right? So your IEJ or DEI efforts are undertaken in order to comply with laws. So we worry about ADA, right? So that's our kind of diversity work for the disabled community. Or we are, lots of you come from states where sexual harassment training is mandatory for hospitality, so that might be your work there, right? But it's about compliance. Or it's response to social pressure, right? Like something has happened and you brewed some brave noise, right? That would be your stage two. Stage three is a proactive stage. This is also quite common. Your organization has a clear awareness of the value of your JEDI or IEJ or DEI work, right? You know it's something that you like to be doing. You're clearly aware of the value, and you've even kind of begun to do some implementations. But at this stage, you're not really seeing any outcomes yet, right? Like, you're just kind of getting there and starting to get the work in. Stage four is our progressive stage, meaning we're making progress. You're implementing the work systemically, and it's beginning to show you some improved results, right? And then stage five is the best practice stage. This is when you're demonstrating best practices, you're achieving successful results, and you're serving as an exemplar for other organizations in the space. Okay. So I think one of the most important things you can do with your team, whether it's your whole team or just your leadership team or just your management team, is sit down and do this, right? Fill it out and figure out where you are, okay? So one of the things I want to do right now is to give you all a little bit of time to jump into this and take a look. Think about your own businesses, et cetera. And what we'll do is kind of float around while you're all doing it. I encourage you to talk to the other folks at your table if you want to like bounce ideas off. And what I would like to do is answer any questions, meaning like, can you tell me what stage two looks like in this area? Or can you tell me an example of what like a stage three thing might look like in this particular area? Obviously, we don't have time to go through the whole thing, but what I want to do is just give you some troubleshooting so that if you use this later, you can answer questions for folks in your organizations. So we've got about 20 minutes left in our session here. So I'm going to give you about 5 to 10 to just kind of look through, and we'll float around. I'll answer some questions, and then we'll wrap up afterward. Yeah, I will say the link again. But yes, available online, free to download.
Both the stage outline?
Yes, there's like a title page on the online version. Okay, cool. We will pull it back together. I just wanted to take a couple of minutes to address some questions that I got while circulating around the room, and I'm sure you will have more as things go on. But one question kind of got from two different places was, is everything going to apply to everyone? And that answer is no. So if you are not a brewery, or you are a brewery with a unique model, like you're a recipe brewer or contract or something along those lines, you might not be involved in like overall visioning conversations or things along those lines. Or you might be the only employee. So recruitment and pipeline isn't important. That's totally fine, right? Get rid of the categories that don't work for you. And if there are categories that need to be on here, add them. But the practice should work more or less the same way. I also got a question just to talk a little bit about the assessment, measurement, and research item. Just kind of what is that and what could it look like? If you remember the first chart we put up, this one, right? At the bottom, we're looking at outcomes, right? And it says interval there, too. So, like, outcome within what interval of time? In order to kind of know what the outcomes are, you have to measure. And it's really, like, how much are you using measurement and assessment to shape your process? Really simple example, and I'll tie it into another question I got. A lot of people are like, I'm really struggling as far as like diversifying my workforce. That's tough. And I always tell people that like diversifying workforce starts with pipeline development. So you have to develop a bigger, more diverse pipeline of qualified candidates to choose from. So like that's where that work starts. And lots of the pipeline work can be like measurement based. So one of the things I love doing is saying like, all right, we need to grow this pipeline and we know who we're trying to reach. We can start collecting some data from the people that apply. Right? So you can use, once people turn in their application, you can divert them to an anonymous demographic survey and just explain like, we're just trying to collect some information from the people who apply for our jobs so that we know we're reaching everybody in the community. Couple different ways you can use that data. You can look at it and say, We notice that only 10% of our candidates are female. We should need to do some outreach because we're just not getting those folks applying. Right? Or you can do things like, we'll look at the aggregate data and say, no one from XYZ community has applied yet. We're going to keep this application open until we get some candidates from this group. Like, you don't know who they are, but you are allowed to know, like, are they in the pool or not, right? And I think those are two ways you can use, right, research and assessment to kind of shape your practices. Two quick examples. Last question I had was about pipeline development, especially when you're in an area where there's not a lot of different people to come into your pipeline. You have some choices there. One is do what you can and then realize that, like, geographically, this is not going to work for us, so we can try to make an impact in other ways. So I've seen a lot of folks, especially in rural communities, actually also in Maine, decide that, like, rather than push the effort in terms of building out their employees, they're really going to push supplier diversity and say, we're going to look to use as many vendors, suppliers, partners that have either diverse ownership or who are values aligned and make our money make our impact since we're not able to have the folks, right? So it's another reason why I actually like using this is because a lot of times people will get hung up on, like, the employee thing or one area and they're like, I'm fucking it up, right? Like, they feel like they're not doing the diversity right because they can't get that one area. And that makes me be like, hey, you've got a lot of areas where you can make impact. So don't panic if you can't make it in one particular way, right? There's lots of ways you can make an impact. As you're thinking about your inclusion, equity, and justice practice, I like to think that, like, a holistic practice is the type that's going to sustain. A lot of people get started, they make the committee, they have the conversations, and then you have that committee meeting 97 times, right? And then, but you didn't do anything. And for me, that means one of these pieces is missing. Right? So holistic IEJ practice for me has vision. Right? This is the part we love. We will get together and vision to death, right? We do the vision, right? Systems are often missing, right? So you need systems to carry out your vision. One of those systems is HR, right? Other systems should be designed for you, right? I know most of you, if not all of you in here, know how to make an SOP. Those are the systems, right? So when people talk about hiring, I'm like, yeah, if you get something that works, create an SOP, create a hiring kit so that everybody can repeat what you just did, right? If you have one taproom manager who just seems to be freaking great at, like, welcoming everyone, right, help that person write an SOP so that everybody else knows how to do it, right? And then it's about building it into the systems, right? So that it's the way you do things, not what you're doing. Right? Lots of times what we're trying to do is, like, have a DEI program, and I'm like, nah, it's not about programs. Right? It's about the process that you use to do everything. Right? Is your procurement, right, inclusive, equitable, just? Is your hiring inclusive, equitable, just? Is your community relations inclusive, equitable, just? Is your promotion system inclusive, equitable, just? Right? It's about the processes. So make sure that you're building systems. Assessment, you got to collect data so you know things are working, right? Imagine if you sold beer and you collected no data about your sales, right? Like, people are like, how many cases did we sell? I don't know. Some? Right? Like, people stare at that IRI data. Like, you have to have data so you know what you're doing. Same thing, right? Same thing. And then lastly, ongoing learning. Okay. Usually people do this first, right? They're like, I need to hire the training. I need the trainer, right? Or I need Dr. Jake, can you come talk to me? you know, yes, that's helpful. But if the training and the learning isn't happening in the environment with the other three things, it's going to have, like, diminishing returns, and very quickly it's going back to nothing, Right? So this is what how holistic practice looks like to me. Just a review of these 12 areas on your sheets, right? The point here is that there are lots of different things that you do in your business that you can bring, right, IEJ practice to. And what I like to tell people is that the goal is to level up, right? Whatever level you've assessed yourself at, the goal is to get to the next level. If you assessed at level 1 or 2, do not try to level up to 5. Right? You will not make it. Okay? My kid likes to tell me about the video games. He's like, you need more time. Right? If I went to like the main boss room when I just picked up the controller, like I'd get obliterated. Right? Like you need to spend some time. So don't level up from 1 to 5. Level up from 1 to 2. And then 2 to 3, and then 3 to 4. Right? How you do that is up to you. A lot of people say, if I'm in 1 or 2, we're in the red, we need to fix that. Like, let's get everybody at 1 up to the next level at least. Some people like to say, you know what, we're at 3 or 4 somewhere, let's go ahead and work on that and establish best practices, right? And that's really good for momentum internally, right? Like, so you can use this strategically. It doesn't necessarily mean, like, worst score gets all the attention. You can think about ways that this works for you, right? And work on it strategically. One of the things you can do to help level up, that looks so insane. Crafted for All has what we call the Crafted for All commitment. It is a list of 23 action items that anyone can take today to start moving towards more inclusive, equitable, and just practices. If you just go to craftforall.com, look for the link to commit, and you'll see what those action items are. If you join the Crafted for All commitment, you join a community of about 90 breweries, cideries, professional development associations who have made this commitment. You get access to our artwork. You can use it on your space. We'll give you stickers. You can put on your labels. Do what you want with it. And it's really just a statement that you're making an effort to make sure you hit all 23 of those action items. We also have some great materials of folks who have made the commit a while ago and shared with us how they're attacking some of these action items. So we'll share that with you when you join. Some breweries have shared, like, you know, this is what we did to try things, and that's a great community of folks. And I would encourage you to reach out to the people who are on our list who have already made the commitment to talk to them about what they're doing. We really think of it as a community. With that, because I know we're closing, I can take maybe 1 or 2 questions, and then we're on to the next session. So, yeah. For marketing and external comms. Yeah, so for me, this is at the place where marketing external communications are, you have like a responsive relationship with like a diverse constituency of people that you're talking to. So you are kind of meeting them where they are. You have a good idea of like what their needs are. So you're not just talking at people and hoping it lands. That might come in the form of like, consumer feedback groups, right? Focus groups, like doing some effort to reach people. I would also say that it means that you're not only talking about underrepresented or marginalized groups when it's like special marginalized group month, right? So it means, like, you know what I mean. So for example, like you have an ongoing dialogue that it is open and acknowledging of LGBTQI community, not just during Pride Month, right? I mean, one of the interesting things for me is that, you know, when George Floyd happened, the biggest question I got from people was, should I say anything? Right? Should I say something? And I think the reason they had that question wasn't because they didn't know whether to say anything or not. It was because they wanted to say something and they were not in the habit of saying things. Right. And so 4 and 5 kind of looks like I'm in the habit of saying what it is that is a values aligned for my space so that if something happened, I wouldn't even pause to say something because it's already built in. I'm already talking about it. Now, what you're saying, that has to be defined by your community, right? And by your values and by your brewery. So I wouldn't say, like, you should be saying this. It's that whatever your values are, you should be saying them. And Scotty said something really, really important up there about the alignment between your internal who you say you are and your external who you say you are. And I will propose that, like, the reckoning with sexism and sexual harassment and sexual violence that this industry went through, if you look at some of the folks who, like, were most affected by that, that's what you saw. Who they said they were on the outside was not who they were on the inside. Right? And so I would also say that, like, level 4 or 5, that matches up. Awesome, y'all. So next breakout session starts now, or in 5 minutes. So if you stay in here, I believe it's going to be Advanced Allyship Workshop. And then in the other breakout room will be Bring Change Collaborative, which is a local Minneapolis group that does DE&I advocacy. So enjoy this, and I will see you all at lunch, all right? I lied. Brewing changes in here.